Astra vicharanai kanipano sadharma samstapako loka nam hitakarano tribhuvane manyo sharanya karo radha krishna padaravinda bhajana nandena mata aliko vande rupa sanatano ragujago sri jiva gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shishad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. So I don't know if we really need to go over what we discussed yesterday. It was mainly just revising what we'd been over the day before. Just one small thing I'll just add here.
You may, I don't know if you noted this, you may have noted it. These unknown offences, they can be either offences which you committed when you were a neophyte and you weren't really aware what offences were, so you weren't really so worried about whether you're committing them or not, but inevitably you would somehow. In different situations, some of your conditioning would come out, so you would do something against the devotional principles. Or, at present, every day we are interacting with our God brothers and God sisters and all the devotees, and somehow knowingly, or unknowingly basically, unknowingly, we may commit some offense. So, these types, these two categories of unknown offenses will be, the effects will be overcome by every morning chanting the prayer, as long as one does it nicely, as we mentioned, not in a mechanical fashion. So, today then we'll go on. We're actually going to try and, we'll see how much we can cover, but I've prepared notes on chapters 9, 10, 11 and 12, and 13 actually. Quite a bit of material. As we mentioned the other day, that these chapters are elaborating on all these 64 rules and regulations which were described in chapter 6. So we already went through the first 20, the 10, first 10 do's and the first 10 do nots. And then we particularly focused on one of the do nots, which was that you must not commit offenses. So more or less we got through the first 20, except for the last, the 20th one, which is blasphemy. You have a look on page 73, first page of chapter 9. So, of course, this idea of blasphemy, it overlaps with what we've been discussing, actually, about offenses to devotees. There is some overlapping there. As we mentioned, in some cases, some of these principles do tend to overlap anyway. So this is one case. But there is a distinction, really, between this blasphemy, and then, or that one must not hear blasphemy, and the idea of not blaspheming, being the first of the 10 offenses in the chanting of the holy names. So the idea of the first offense in chanting the holy names is that you must not blaspheme. If you blaspheme, then you commit an offense. The idea here, this is the 20th of the first 20, main 20 in a sense, rules and regulations. The point here is that you must not hear blasphemy. And if you happen to, then you must not tolerate it. And there are certain things that you must do, or you must select between certain alternatives as to how you respond if you happen to hear blasphemy from someone else. And that is described, actually, in the verses I gave you yesterday. Do you have that sheet from yesterday? Actually, I don't think I even brought my one with me, but... Okay. The first one. Actually, do you mind running down to my room and getting me one copy of this? 9 to 11. Yeah, so the top one here is actually the verse which Srila Prabhupada is referring to in the first paragraph here on page 73. Nindam Bhagavata Shunvans Tat Parasya Janasyava Tatona Paiti Yaso Pi Yat Yada Sukrita Chuta. If you hear blasphemy against the Lord and his devotees, and if you don't go away, then you become bereft of the effects of your pious activities. And not just your mundane pious activities, but you'll become bereft of your devotional assets also. Your position in devotional service will be affected, and it can be severely affected. So, the alternatives are, if you look in the third paragraph here, we have a number of alternatives you can choose. You can try to defeat the opposing party by argument. If you can do that, do it. If you can't do that, then commit suicide. And if you can't do that, then go away. So to defeat the opposing person is actually the best thing. If someone is speaking some nonsense, and particularly some blasphemy, then we should certainly be keen to defeat that and establish the right idea and correct the situation. So that's the best thing. If you can't do that, you could give up your life, but I don't think you would, but anyways. So probably we won't bother about discussing that alternative, although it exists. But at least you should go away immediately. Just get away. And if you don't do that, then right at the end of this third paragraph, Prabhupada makes a very strong point. If a devotee does not follow any of the above mentioned three processes, you don't defeat the person, you don't kill yourself, and you don't go away. In other words, you just stay there hearing the blasphemy, because that's basically all that's left. Then you'll fall down. So, very severe, thank you. Here you go. Thanks. Yeah, so it's very severe. Admonishment. Srila Prabhupada's giving here. So it's a very serious thing. And yesterday, of course, actually we were speaking really in terms of, in the context of the first offense in the chanting of the holy names, but strictly speaking it's more related to this offense, this sort of way of looking at the whole subject of blasphemy. So if you have heard blasphemy in the past, but you didn't really realize it was blasphemy, then later you realize. So that means you have been affected. Some contamination will be there, So how do you get free? You can go back to the person who was blaspheming and tell them, explain to them how you felt it was blasphemy, and in this way you can free yourself. Or if you feel that you have blasphemed someone without knowing it, or even if you feel you've heard blasphemy of a person, knowingly or unknowingly, but you're feeling bad about it, then you can also go to that person who was blasphemed and apologize to them. They may not even know about it, but at least you'll be relieving yourself. Because otherwise these things can build up and they can have serious effects, to the point, as Prabhupada says here, one can fall down. So it is serious, it is bad. So now, then there's wearing tilak and tulsi beads. Of course, that's very important and very nice and very valuable. Then the list goes on, and we have a whole series of rules and regulations. We don't really propose to go through them all in great detail, but just try and clarify at least in general. So, number 23, that's at least in the list as it appears in chapter 6. Or in other words, number 23 is the next one. No, wait a minute. Yeah, after tilak and tulsi beads. Accepting flower garlands. So from that one on to number 31, which as it appears in chapter 9, is rendering service to the Lord. Then there's a bit of a gap to 37. From 37 to 42, 37 is partaking prasadam. Then the ones that follow after that to number 42, which is observing arati. So now all of these, they are related to deity worship. Basically. They're basically related to deity worship. So, deity worship, of course, is the basic function of sadhana bhakti is that we have to engage the mind and engage the senses in devotional service to Krishna. So worshipping the deity who is Krishna in person is certainly a very excellent and very important way of engaging your senses and your mind in the service of Krishna. So I'm not going to go through all these in detail, but it's pretty much sort of self-evident that on the whole they're related to deity worship, different aspects of deity worship, and that to do them will certainly be beneficial, and so therefore these rules are important, instructing us to do these things. Just a couple of little points. Number 30 and 31, temple worship or archana. This appears on page 77. And rendering service to the Lord on 78. The next one. Archana basically means, you might think they're the same thing. Archana, though, means the regulated program of deity worship. Basically, the idea of doing arati and offering prasad and bathing and dressing the deities in the routine fashion, authorized fashion. And rendering service to the Lord, if you read through, I hope you read through, we asked you to read through. Prabhupada says in the second paragraph that the conclusion in regard to rendering service to the Lord is that rich people should construct temples and arrange very, very gorgeous worship of the Lord. In other words, these are activities which are part of deity worship, but they're not just the routine things like you must offer arati at such and such a time, you must wake the deities at such and such a time. It means how to make the deity worship and temple worship very nice. If you happen to be wealthy, then provide very wonderful boga and very nice arrangements for festivals like this, as distinct from the basic routine of the deity worship program. In fact, ideally, you should worship Krishna like a king. He should be worshipped with all opulence. Like in some temples, like Tirupati particularly. Then every day there's a festival. Every day. Almost every day. Well, every day there's a festival of some sort. Almost every day, the festival involves taking the deities out and having a big procession. So they do it in a very grand way. So this type of thing, if people can arrange for special worship of the Lord, this is what is implied by rendering service to the Lord. Then, now, let's see. Sankirtan. This is on page 79. So, there are a number of verses given there. The one from the Vishnu Dharma is about Naam Sankirtan. That's the first one. The one from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7.9.18, is Leela. These are different types of Sankirtan. And the one from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1.5.22, is about what? Just have a look and see. 1.5.22. What does it appear to be Sankirtan about? What's it glorifying? 1.5.22. Do you see it? It's about glorifying the Lord, His qualities, guna sankirtan. So three types of sankirtan. The name, pastimes, and qualities of the Lord. Then another interesting one is submission, beginning on page 80. Submission. Three types of submission. Samprartanatmika, very feelingly offering prayers. Dainyavodika, expressing a mood of humility. And lalasamayi, desiring perfection. So, if you look down at the next paragraph, you'll see in the Padma Purana there's a statement. So the statement is, "My Lord, I know that young girls have natural affection for young boys, and vice versa. I'm praying at your lotus feet that my mind may become attracted unto you in the same spontaneous way." So this is a feeling, a mood of very feelingly praying for bhava, actually. One is not actually praying for a particular relationship, but one is just praying for relationship with the Lord on the platform of love, on the platform of ecstasy. So more or less this is reflecting the mood of a person who's hankering for the level of bhava. Then the next paragraph is the example of the second type of submission, humility. The devotee is feeling himself or herself to be extremely insignificant before the deity. Before the deity, actually. So this is also a very elevated stage, that one is actually feeling so humble. Then, turning over to page 82, right in the middle of the page, in the Narada Pancharatra, so there's a statement of submission, the same mood of submission, but accompanied by the desire for perfection. This is actually Narada Muni, of course, speaking, because he's the person who spoke Narada Pancharatra. So he is actually praying for a specific type of relationship, a specific type of perfection. Therefore, we understand that this is more on the level of prema. Whereas the very first one, which was talking about wanting an attraction for the Lord, like young boys and young girls have for each other, but having some very strong attraction like that, that's not in regard to a specific relationship. So we understand that to be hankering for the level of bhava, in which the relationship with the Lord is not so specific. And in fact, if you just turn back to page 81, back up at the top of page 81, just after where these three types of submission are referred to, Prabhupada says, this desiring some perfectional stage in spiritual life is not sense gratification. When one realizes something of his constitutional relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he understands his original position and wants to be reinstated in this position. In one of the rasas, friend, servant, parent, or conjugal lover. And this is called lalasa mayi, or being very eager to attain one's natural relationship, specific relationship. So this lalasa mayi stage of submission, this mood of praying in this way, comes in the stage of perfect liberation called Swarup Siddhi, when one understands by perfect spiritual advancement and revelation one's original relationship with the Lord. So I'm just making the point, you know, I'm certainly not, I don't really expect that any of us are on any of these levels, to be quite frank, but just so we understand what they are, or at least have an idea what they are. Then if you turn over again now to page 83, the last paragraph. Well, actually, if we have a look at the last paragraph on page 82, going over to the top of page 83. So this is another expression of the same mood. The devotee's desiring to become totally overwhelmed in on the level, like topmost level of love of God, and hankering for that, lalasa mayi. And Prabhupada saying at the top of page 83 that one should feelingly pray and become eager to render his particular type of service to the Lord. And this, of course, is like one of our fundamental teachings. It's not just some obscure idea. And Lord Chaitanya in particular has stressed this. However, we just read at the top of page 81 that this really only happens when one is becoming perfect and it is becoming revealed what one's original relationship is with Krishna. But what can help, again at the top of page 83, Prabhupada says, in other words, one should learn how to cry for the Lord. Obviously, this is not referring to some artificial process. We've made mention, and I'm sure we've heard sufficient about that at this point. So it doesn't mean just some artificial process. But the idea is that one should actually become attached to the Lord so that one actually feels these transcendental emotions. Prabhupada says one should learn this small technique. Here Prabhupada is sort of giving a little insight into his exalted position. For us, it's not just a small technique, like you somehow learn to squeeze out some tears. They call it crocodile tears, don't they? I've heard that term. So obviously it's not exactly a small technique, you just learn how to cry. But actually one has to become very advanced, and then naturally by revelation, naturally, some hints will come of these things and the attraction will develop for a particular type of service on the perfectional platform. So this is certainly a very exalted level, and we shouldn't mistake that. I don't expect that any of you are, but certainly we shouldn't, in principle. In fact, I have one interesting quote from Srila Prabhupada, actually from one of his classes, in which he's talking about this word lolium. Lolium, the word is used by Ramananda Roy. You'll find it. It's Madhya Leela, chapter 8, verse 70. Ramananda Roy is speaking to Lord Chaitanya about how to become Krishna conscious. What is the price? If you really want to get this elevated level of Krishna consciousness, what price you have to pay, what you have to do to get it. So he speaks one verse, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita. I don't have the whole verse here. But here I've got some excerpt from Srila Prabhupada in which he's making it clear that it's not cheap. You should develop this eagerness which is being described, but you should also understand it's not cheap and it's not just exactly a small thing. So Prabhupada says, in another poem, Rupa Goswami says, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavatam Ati Kriyatam Yadi Kutopi Labhyate. Thee, our this Krishna consciousness, I have taken this from the word Krishna. Oh, he's saying that this word Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada derived that word. Prabhupada actually sort of created this term Krishna consciousness. So where from? He's saying, I've taken this from this word, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita, which is the first line of this verse about lolium. So this is actual translation in Sanskrit. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. Krishna consciousness. So Rupa Goswami advises that Krishna consciousness, if it's possible, please purchase it. Don't delay. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavata Mati Kriyatam. Purchase immediately. Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavata Mati Kriyatam Yadi Kutopi. So Kutopi. Where is it available? He's speaking to someone. Now that person is asking, where is it available? It's a very nice thing. And he, Prabhupada, is replying, yes, it is available. You can purchase. The Krishna consciousness movement is... What is that? Prabhupada replies, tatra lolyam, ekalam mulyam. So, ekalam only, the only price, mulyam, which is the root. Simply your eagerness, that is price. This price you have to pay. Then you get Krishna. Immediately. Krishna is not poor. And the Krishna seller, the Krishna devotee, he's also not poor. He can distribute Krishna free. And he's doing that. Simply you have to purchase by your eagerness. That is wanted. Tatra lolyam. That eagerness. Tatra lolyam. That eagerness. So the other person responds, oh, eagerness? I have eagerness. So he's saying, okay, I'll pay the price here. Oh, eagerness? I've got eagerness. And Prabhupada replies, oh, it is not so easy. Tatralolyam ekalam mulyam janmakoti sukratir na labhyate. This eagerness cannot be achieved even by janmakoti sukratir na. Even by pious activities for millions of births. If you simply go on doing pious activities. Because without being pious, you cannot approach Krishna. So if you go on doing simply pious, janma koti sukratiya, still this eagerness is not awakened. So this eagerness is a very important thing. But it can be awakened by the association of devotees. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement, we're giving chance to everyone to invoke that eagerness. Then you will see God eye to eye. It is not difficult. Prabhupada. It's very amazing how Prabhupada expresses himself. Then you'll see God eye to eye. It's not difficult. Like, you should learn how to cry for the Lord. You should learn this small technique. So Prabhupada, you know, he's on a very, very high level of Krishna consciousness, of actual realization. So he can say, it's not difficult. If it was you or me, we couldn't really say that. Well, it's not difficult. How could we say that? What grounds have we got for offering that opinion? But the thing is that Prabhupada created this Krishna consciousness movement to give association, and through the association of this movement or the devotees within the movement, then everything will develop. Everything. From the very beginnings of Krishna consciousness in a neophyte, to the topmost levels of Krishna consciousness in those who are actually very advanced and qualified. Anyway, it is a rule that we should be submissive. We should try to be in a mood of submission. And without, you know, cheapening things, we should definitely submissively pray for our advancement and for the mercy of the Lord, so that we can actually eventually come to the advanced levels of Krishna consciousness. And these different verses being quoted are examples of these three different types of submissive prayers. That Narada Pancharatra one on page 82 in the middle, he wants to actually fan the Lord directly. In other words, he would like to experience the rasa of dasya ras. He's hankering for dasya ras, that particular relationship of dasya ras. Okay, so now, let's see. There's various others. Mainly they're dealing with deity worship. And that takes us to the end of chapter 9. Then, chapter 10. So all these, in other words, all these are appearing in chapter 9. Chapter 9. Plus a couple of others. But mainly chapter 9 is being devoted more to deity worship than anything else. Now, we go on to chapter 10, techniques of hearing and remembering. So the subject is not so much, it's not really deity worship. 43 is hearing. What is that? Oh, it's the first one, hearing. So, there are three types of hearing referred to. And basically, because there are three types of chanting or sankirtan, name, pastimes, and qualities, so there are three types of hearing. Naturally.
because you can only hear what's chanted. So, first is the quote from the Garuda Purana. You see that quote? So that is Naam. And of course the word for hearing is Shravana. Anyway, hearing the name. The second, from the fourth canto somewhere, is Leela. And the third, from the Srimad Bhagavatam 12th canto, is Guna. Assume you know what Guna means. Qualities. So, in these ways, Rupa Goswami is systematically presenting his evidences. Three types of hearing, based on or receiving the sound vibration of the three types of chanting. Then, the next one, expecting the Lord's mercy, that's a very relevant one. An important verse is referred to right at the top of this little section from the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 8. This is Lord Brahma's prayers. So now this verse, if you refer to your verse sheet from yesterday, chapters 9 to 11, it's the second one. Tatenukampam susamikshamano bunjana ivatmat kritam vipakam hridvag vahubir vididan namaste jivetiyo mukti pade sadaya bak. Very important verse. And the basic idea here is expecting the Lord's mercy, but the problem is that we are very unqualified and we have so many reactions and so on like that. So the idea, Lord Brahma is praying that anyone who just perseveres, sticks at the process of devotional service, and tolerates whatever reactions one is due, the reactions you are due are the ones that you get. So when you get a reaction, you should know that I was due for that. So you tolerate the reactions you're due, the reactions you get, and you carry on, constantly hankering, constantly desiring for the mercy of the Lord. So you carry on, and while you're doing that, you offer your respectful obeisances. You don't just carry on. Certainly you shouldn't have some, like an envious attitude to the Lord that I'm trying to serve you, so why are you allowing so much suffering to come to me? Actually, you should carry on offering your obeisances from the core of the heart, very feelingly, just like we just discussed a little bit about submission. So in mood, something like that, at least like the second of those three moods, understanding oneself to be very unqualified, one should carry on offering obeisances to the Lord from the core of the heart, and never deviating from the process. So Prabhupada explains here in the second paragraph, this statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. So this is a very important thing, because we are all going to get, different things are going to happen to us. We're all going to, unfortunately, end up suffering sometime. Even though Krishna consciousness is a very blissful process, but sometimes some problems arise, and that unfortunately is the way it goes in the material world. So therefore, this statement should be our guide, how to deal with these awkward situations which inevitably will occur. A devotee shouldn't expect immediate relief, not some sort of utopia, that now I took to Krishna consciousness and now I should never get sick, I should never get anxiety, no one should ever steal anything from me or whatever it may be. A devotee shouldn't expect immediate relief. So, then if you go about, say, halfway down this paragraph, a devotee who's not perfectly freed, meaning a devotee who's not fully surrendered, a devotee who's not fully advanced, because Krishna says that he reciprocates according to our degree of surrender. So if you're not fully surrendered, you won't be fully relieved. A devotee who's not perfectly freed from the resultant actions should therefore continue acting in Krishna consciousness seriously, even though there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, one should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. That is the only solace. And if the devotee passes his days in that spirit, it's certain that he's going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. Or as it says in the translation of the verse here, he's surely eligible for liberation, and going back to Godhead is the highest form of liberation, because it's become his rightful claim. And the word there is... Dayabak. Literally, Dayabak translates as rightful inheritance. Just in exactly the same sense that a child in a family, naturally as time goes on, rightfully inherits the property of the parents. So it's exactly in that sense of parent to child, the child inheriting in a natural, rightful way from the parent. So in such a natural and rightful way, the devotee gets access to the kingdom of God simply by doing like what is said here. That's all. Sridhar Swami, I think it is. Let me just see. Sridhar Swami, yes, says that for a son, for a child to inherit from the parents, all they have to do is stay alive. That's the only qualification they need. They don't need to be big experts, big intellectuals, physically strong. They don't need to do anything other than be alive. And then they just naturally inherit. It's as simple as that. So, in other words, all we have to do is stay alive in Krishna consciousness, means be Krishna conscious and just stick at it. And if we do like that, then the kingdom of God becomes our rightful inheritance. That's all. So that's a very nice point. And we, in our forthcoming test, we forgot all about tests, didn't we? Anyway, don't worry about it. But you will be asked about this. You'll be asked about this in the test, and you'll be tested on this in your life. So learn it. It's very, very practical. Don't think you won't be tested on this, either in the test or in your life. You can be sure that you will. So just hang on to Krishna's lotus feet and chant Hare Krishna and expect his mercy and feelingly pray for his mercy. So that's very nice and very important. How are we doing? Well, let's just cover the last two in this chapter. Remembrance and meditation. Of course, remembrance and meditation are related. But The difference is that meditation is a deeper level of remembrance. Remembrance indicates that you should try to come to the point where you're able to remember. And meditating means that you're remembering all the time. You're absorbed in the subject of remembrance. So it's like two stages, in a sense. Two stages in the same process of fixing the mind on Krishna. And again, there are types of remembrance and types of meditation. And they're very similar to the hearing and chanting and hearing, but not exactly the same. It's not exactly that one would just remember Krishna's name so much, although one would chant and hear Krishna's name. So what one remembers should basically be Krishna's form, remembers, meditates on it, his qualities, his pastimes, and his service to him. One should remember and meditate, meditating being a more developed form of remembrance, on these four things. Let's see. Oh yeah, Prabhupada here gives a very, or Rupa Goswami actually, gives a very, very interesting example of the power of this practice of meditation. It's on basically on page 93. The story of the South Indian Brahmin, you've probably heard the story. He was very poor, so he wasn't able to worship the Lord. He wasn't able to render service in a very glorious way to the deity. But one day he went into a gathering of devotees and they were discussing that if you meditate on serving the Lord in a particular way, then that is as good as doing it. Or even you are doing it. You're actually doing it. Although it's going on the mental platform, spiritual, transcendental mental platform. So therefore he decided that let me try, but he wasn't totally convinced. Although he thought, let me try and see. So in his mind he was meditating on serving Krishna in a very grand way, using wonderful paraphernalia, and everything was very, very, very nice indeed. And he was meditating on cooking a big feast for the deities. And there was some sweet rice which he had boiled, and he wanted to see whether it was still hot, because it's not meant to really be hot. So he put one of his fingers in his meditation, and found that it was really hot, and he pulled his finger out. And it was a shock in his meditation, so he came out of his meditation, and he saw his finger was actually burnt. And then a Vaikuntha airplane descended and took him back to the spiritual world. So this is a very nice story. Prabhupada actually is explaining quite elaborately. The whole of page 93 and the whole of page 94 is just dedicated to the story to illustrate how powerful and real a process remembering, and particularly meditating, this being very fixed in remembrance, how powerful these processes are. Any comments or questions so far? So let us take a break till 11:15. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Chapters 9 and 10. So now we'll go on to chapter 11. And among other things, this is discussing Dasyam, Sakyam, and Atma Nivedanam, which are of the nine main processes, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, and so on. These are the three most advanced, or really particularly Sakyam and Atma Nivedanam are the two most advanced of those nine. And I think it'll be fairly clear why they are when we get there, when we get to them. So there's a discussion about servitorship. There are two levels of servitorship being discussed, impure and pure. And they're both referred to in the first paragraph there. That some people think that if you just do your duty, the duty you're attached to according to your material nature, in other words, your karma, if you do your karma and then offer it to Krishna, then they take that to be servitorship. But the Vaishnava Acharyas, like Rupa Goswami, they feel that this term servitorship, it really applies to pure devotional service. Not just doing your regular material work and then just offering the result, but pure devotional service, dedicating yourself heart and soul to pleasing the Lord. So then there's a whole discussion, the next paragraph going over to the next page. And the basic idea really is that Rupa Goswami accepts that even if you do your duty according to Varnashram and all your various other ritualistic obligations or material obligations, and you offer the results of all of that to Krishna, then still it can be accepted that this is devotional service, but it's not pure devotional service. And he's basically saying that. That he says those who are engaged in fruitive activities or prescribed duties according to Varnashram are not actually pure devotees. But still, because they're offering the result to the Lord, they are accepted as devotees. But a higher qualification, if you turn over to page 96. What we should be working towards, basically. Rupa Goswami describes one who is fit for becoming engaged in devotional service. He says that people who are neophytes and who have developed a little love of God are not interested in activities of sense gratification in proportion to their devotion. But if there's still some attraction to Maya, then at least you should offer the results of those material activities to Krishna. And this is a type of devotional service, and you will be purified. And to substantiate that, because it is an important point, to substantiate that, if you look at this next... Wait a minute. Yes. Anyway, I've included this verse on the sheet which says chapters 12 to 13, although it actually comes up in chapter 11. Anyway, sorry about that, but if you turn over to the back of the page, at the top there, Iha yasya hariya darsye karmana manasagira nikalas vapyavastasu jivan muktasu uchite. So this is the verse that Prabhupada is referring to in the last paragraph of this section about servitorship from the Naradiya Purana. There's a statement of how this this type of servitorship is transcendental, even though you're not very advanced. Still, it's transcendental. A person acting in Krishna consciousness with his body, mind, intelligence, and words is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. So this is the verse. In the Naradiya Purana, there's a statement of how this servitorship is transcendental. It is said there that a person who's constantly engaged in devotional service by his body, mind, and words, or even a person who's not practically engaged, but is simply desiring to be so, is considered to be liberated. That's quite an extraordinary statement. Even if you're not engaged very nicely, but you're just desiring to be engaged nicely, then you're considered liberated. So you're all liberated, I guess. As we mentioned the other day about degree of liberation. Not that we're hankering for liberation, but effectively one becomes liberated, whether one likes it or not, just by engaging in devotional service. So there was a degree which we called complete or total liberation. The person is completely purified in all respects, and they're totally on the transcendental platform, untouched by even a hint of material contamination. Then we referred to being sufficiently liberated to maintain the platform of Krishna consciousness without falling down. So effectively one is liberated, even though there is a difference between the two levels. So here, what to speak of a person who's nicely engaged in devotional service, even a person who's not nicely engaged, but wants to be, is considered to be liberated. So just see how powerful devotional service is. Again, you're thinking about it, just like that South Indian Brahmin. He was just thinking, and he got the result. So in this way, if you're just desiring to be absorbed in pure devotional service, then you're also elevated just by that desire. So just see what a process devotional service is. So then devotional service in friendship. So there are two types of friendship.
Two types of friendship. One is as a well-wisher, and the other is an actual friendly relationship, like a direct relationship in friendship.
There are a couple of interesting examples given of the first type. The first one is that in the second paragraph in this section from the Mahabharata, there Draupadi is accepting Krishna as her well-wisher. You have promised your devotee will never be vanquished. Therefore, I remember your promise. In other words, I know you're my well-wisher, therefore I'm living. Then, the second type,